Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Okay. Last week we did not learn, but the week before we learned the first part of Perek Chofei of the Tiferes Israel, and today we're going to focus on the last part of it. The topic here is the notion of Zman Matan Torah, the time of Matan Torah, the chosen time for the giving of the Torah. And as we saw, there are three levels to what the Maharal wants to address. we talked about the first two, and we now have the third. The first issue was the idea that there is a Zman, right? The discussion of Lakol Zman Ve'es L'chol Chefetz Tachas HaShemayim. And the Maharal had a very important and subtle, beautiful distinction between Zman Ve'es. Right? Zman is being part of the continuum of time, whereas Ace is related to the word Atah, Ayin Tav Hey, now. And he pointed out from the language of Chazal that when it came to things which exist within the material world, those things are called having what called Zman. Everything has a Zman. But Ace L'chol Chefetz Tachas HaShemayim refers specifically to the acceptance of the Torah, because Torah is somehow, it's a moment, and it's not going to be connected to the regular general continuum of time as something which comes from Hashem divinely. Okay, that's, but we discussed it, those who were here, those who weren't here, it requires proper discussion to be able to get back down to it. The second element was, again, in terms of particular times, and one which he focused on was Chodesh HaShlishi, the fact that it's in the third month. And there were two basic mahalchim, two basic approaches which he talked about there. One was the magic of the number three, which we've talked about before in the Sefer, that famous statement, Dorash Ahu Lilo, that the Gemara says that blessed is Hashem who gave the Torah, which is three parts, to the Jewish people composed of three parts, Kainam Levim Yisraelim, and the third month. We talk about how the three brings together the two extremes. That's the earthy version of one, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu in heaven, it's the ultimate unity, right? On earth, the way we accomplish it is by bringing together the disparate parts, and the third is the bridge that brings together the disparate parts. And he related it as well to the idea of Ace, of the Torah, that time, that moment of now, which is, you know, between the past and the future. That was one account. And then what we talked about at the end was the idea, as he says, of Chodeshei Havchana, that in some way this is related to the separation which exists. If a person's married to, a woman's married to one person, and then that marriage ends, however, so then before she marries the other person, there's supposed to be a waiting period of Chodesh HaShlishi, of 3 months. And even over there, it's supposed to be, technically speaking, exactly 90 days, but it's not the Maharal's Chiddush, it's what Chazal say, that to some degree as well, the Jewish people, to undergo the transition between their relationship in Mitzrayim and their relationship of Matan Torah, they needed to have this buffer of these 3 months, so that there would be a separation, so that they would be able to start again, to move from the dveikus, from the attachment to Shibud Mitzrayim, to the attachment of Matan Torah. Now, so those, again, I'm sorry for those who weren't there, or those who were here, and whose memory is not absolutely perfect, if we go over it quickly, but those were the two points which he covered. The third point of Zman is the second specific measure of time which is used with Matan Torah, which is the 50th day of the Sefira. And what's the significance of that component, that aspect of Zman, as it comes across here at Matan Torah? So what the Maharal is going to discuss here was a special motivation for me that we should have the shiur, not only because I realized that most of the people sold their chametz already, so I would get out a little earlier and have the time, but also because of the subject matter of what he's speaking about. which is about Svira and Matan Torah, the idea of the countdown and the growth from Yetzias Mitzrayim to the acceptance of the Torah, as well as particular focus on a very significant irony, which is that whereas we're coming from Pesach, the Yom Tov of Yetzias Mitzrayim, where we can't even have in our possession, let alone eat chametz, and that is on some level a reflection of the prohibition we have in the Beis Hamikdash all the time. We read yesterday in the parsha of Loisei Chametz that the menachos aren't supposed to be made out of chametz. On Shavuos, the korbanos which are brought in the Beis Hamikdash for Shavuos includes the shtei halechem, the two loaves of bread, which bread itself doesn't mean anything because we have lechem aponim, the showbreads in the Beis Hamikdash, which were matzah, but shtei halechem of Shavuos were specifically chametz, the two breads which were brought along with the kivsei atzeres, with lambs that were brought as the public shlomim offerings on Shavuos, were chametz. So, you know, it's not just that we don't have an iser, we don't have a prohibition of chametz on Shavuos, we only have the prohibition on Pesach, but far beyond that, we seem to even have a mitzvah of chametz on Pesach. Excuse me, I have to apologize, I'm going to just step out for 1 minute, and I'll be right back.
Okay. It's like a cape, you know, like that. So Brian, you're a little down on the youth in America, you think? Think they don't have the colonies that they used to?
Well, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you think people have the same level of clarity on good and evil and on truth and falsehood? Do you really think that that's true?
I think it's hard to determine unless you're in it, you know, when faced with it.
I don't think so. I think it's pretty clear that people don't have the same level of clarity.
I don't think you can say that definitively. It's a blanket statement.
It's empirically observable.
Anecdotally, you know.
I think it's completely empirically observable that people have less clarity today on good versus evil.
Every person you've met has.
I didn't say that.
You didn't know it.
What?
You didn't go down.
So you said there was. There's less clarity today.
From a Torah scholar standpoint, but we're talking about just whether or not people have a...
The entire world. I spoke to, for example, someone who's the head of a department at a significant school, high school, who said that in the last decade they've lowered the SATs, the whole entire realm of scoring, twice.
I knew it.
My scores weren't that bad compared to what kids could do today.
Wait, what do you mean they lowered the...
It's easier to get a higher score.
Right.
They did that right around when I took it. First time.
See, when you took SATs when I was taking it...
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a... I think it's about the Strauss effect. There's that, as time goes on, generational, that in the United States they've had that... standardized tests have had to up their standards because people are more educated.
No, there's an eighth grade test that's gone around. It's 1940 something. You know, the eighth grade test. I don't know if you've heard of it before. And the questions are like, what? Like nobody can answer them.
Yeah. You know? And I'm surprised if education has improved in any way, shape, or form. Apologize for that.
Okay, so
the rabbi's.
Yeah.
We always see pictures of the showbread, they always look like, you know, cakes and whatever. So that's
well, matz also look like cake. It just didn't rise. In other words, our matzah is machmir Ashkenazi matzah, which is we make it so flat so that we know we'll put it in the oven, it'll bake, you know, completely and quickly. But matzah is any dough that what was baked before it had a chance to rise. So, you know, laffa bread is also matzah. We don't eat it as matzah, huh? You know what that is? Like whatever. It's just
like the shawarma.
Like pita.
Pita, laffa. It's heavier. It's thicker. It's not fluffy. It's not very fluffy, but it's also matzah, and that's what the lechem afanim was. And that's what generally there's such a thing called rakikin. Our matzahs are more like the rakikin that are described, which is more like wafers. You know, thin, very, very thin.
Ours break. Theirs
right.
Would be thicker. They wouldn't. They would bend. Have a little.
Right. And it's
The Sephardi matzah.
Yeah, they're thicker. Do they actually today? Do the Yemenites eat thicker?
Yeah,
chewier.
Yeah.
Can you order thicker, chewier today?
You can order, but then nobody. No, Ashkenazim don't eat it. Ashkenazim don't eat it. There's still people who eat it.
I guess you can't see the glance, but it's not.
It's not as easy to tell. It's not as easy to tell. Okay, so back. So there's again. So on Shavuos, it's not just that matzah isn't forbidden. But it seems, you know, very much the opposite. So there are some things to understand here. Okay. So first, one element which the Maharal speaks about, which is sort of standard fare, what many others speak about as well, you know, along with him, is that on Pesach we start the counting of the Omer with the bringing of the Korban HaOmer. The Korban HaOmer, which is where the Sfiras HaOmer gets its name, is the first ripened crop of the season. The first ripened crop of the season is generally going to be Sa'irim, barley, right, which ripens earliest, Kya Sa'ira Aviv. The Sa'ira is the first ready fruits of the springtime. And the barley was basically just roasted and brought on the mizbeach, and not processed into anything fancy. And that is machal behema. That's animal food. And the on the other hand, the on Shavuos we bring shtei halechem, which is wheat, processed beautifully into bread. And that is the consummate machal adam. That's the consummate food of a person. So the idea being that when we left Mitzrayim, we had freedom, but we were very much undeveloped, unrefined. We didn't have the madregas ha'adam, the level of man that man was destined to be. You know, remember the context of how Maharal taught us about his hechrech, his absolute requirement that there had to be a Torah min hashamayim. Remember his approach? His approach wasn't through proof. So you say, well, this pasuk says this about animals with split hooves and so on and so forth. So that proves to you that Torah is divine, because how could it be? How would anybody know? You know, like that kind of thing. His proof of Torah min Hashamayim was there had to be a divine guidance that came in Hashamayim in order to fulfill the human potential for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it to be, for the person to be a Tzelem Elokim. Until that point, the human being is just like the others that were created on the sixth day. And so when we left Mitzrayim and we didn't yet have the Torah, and in fact we were very much entrenched in Mitzrayim who themselves subordinated themselves before behemoths, before animals. Malchus Egla, right? The Egla Yefefiyah Mitzrayim. So there we left, we were free, but we were still very much undeveloped. And the countdown of Sfira is to go from bringing the base carbon, which is machal behema, which is the food of the animals, to bringing the shtei alechem, the fine wheat breads of Shavuos, which shows that we have attained something better. Remember that the Gemara, that when Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, Hashem told him that he will eat v'achalta es esav hasadi, he'll eat the grasses of the fields. And Adam started crying, the Gemara says, Zol glein of demois. And he said, me and my donkey are going to eat the same food. We're going to eat out of the same feed bag. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, B'zeis apecha techalechem, by the sweat of your brow you'll eat bread. Now that makes life harder than for a donkey who can just lean over and munch, you know, at the side of the road. But it made Adam feel better, because what did he have to do? He had to process, he had to refine, he had to develop it into bread, which is something that the animal would not be able to do. and while it's work, but at the same time it implies and uses that premeditation, that meleches machsheves, which is what makes man distinct. And so it's, yes, it's a manifestation in the physical world of kayach ha'adam, of the power of man. But yes, in the world of eating, you want to see a manifestation of the advancement of man as well. And that's part of this thing of taking, instead of just the geras karma, instead of just the oats and just you know making them, you know, burn them so they won't be rancid. Instead, you make it into the bread and the wheat, which itself takes more time to develop, and so on and so forth. These are all parts of that which man is counting down and advancing in the realm of Sefirah Seimer. Yeah.
Did Adam in the Gan Eden, did Kadosh Baruch Hu provide him with any lechem?
In Gan Eden, Chazal tell us,
which is processed,
that the trees grew bagels. Bagels. They had everything. Trees. Sesame trees.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. The trees grew
the
bagels.
Cinnamon raisin
types. They grew bagels. In other words, that the refined food was refined, but it was refined from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem did it for them, like fruit. I mean, it grew on trees, so to speak, like fruit is today, where you just pick it off the tree and it's ready. It doesn't have to be refined further. That was the lechem of that world.
So it was completely processed already to begin with.
Yes.
So does that mean that Adam Rishon was also born without an arla?
Yes.
So that goes together then.
Yes.
He was completely processed too.
Yes.
And when, yes, does the arla start?
Chazal say Adam Rishon mashuch barla sehava. Chazal say part of the metaphor of Adam Rishon's sin was that he reversed his arla. He covered up his aver again.
Isn't,
yeah,
there an opinion that the Eitz Hadas was weak, so it's also a,
right,
reversal that he's going from that Machal Behemoth?
Right,
well,
correct.
Huh? Actually breath, like you were saying.
Well, the Gemara says that it was a chita, but then you have to understand, you know, it is likely to be able to be put together with, you know, with this other other thing. The Rashi says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, I think it's in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, that the Gemara says that you, or Megillah, I think it's Rosh Hashanah, that we read the Teichacha, we read the words of rebuke, of warning, of blessing and curse before Shavuos and before Rosh Hashanah. We read it so that the year will end with its klalas, the old year will end with its klalas, and the new year can come now with its brachas. Get the bad things out of the way. So the Gemara says, Rosh Hashanah, I understand, why Shavuos? Says, Gemara, Shavuos is also Rosh Hashanah, because it's Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. Shavuos is considered the new year for trees. Right? The new year for trees. So, you know, of all things, you know, this is the new year for trees. That becomes like the new year. And the Gemara says that the Gemara goes on and says you should bring shtei halechem, the two loaves of bread on Shavuos, so that the fruits of the year will be blessed. You know, loaves of bread for fruits. So Rashi says that this is the opinion, reflects the opinion that the Eit Hadas was a chita, was wheat, and that was the main food of man. The main food of man grew on trees. It was taken care of. And that's why the two loaves of bread represent the fruits of the trees, you know, for the year. It is an ideal that to some degree we want to recognize and to go back to the world where man has peiros, which is what's supposed to be special with man. There are many aspects to this. And you know, lest we over digress, huh?
Paris, I'm sorry.
Pears are fruits.
Oh, okay.
Fruits,
yeah,
the fruits.
Okay.
Fruits. Right. Yeah. So the you know, that's the way it is. Now excuse me for 1 minute. Again. I'm sorry, maybe this is gonna be an interrupted experiment. You know, I never interrupt it. I see some ladies outside. I just don't want them to wait forever for Paris
Khmans. Arla is a cover. The covering of the what's taken off during a bris. We say a person who is not part of the bris, he's not a member of the tribe, he's not Jewish, is called an arla. What? An arel. Sorry, you're right. It's the RL, the person who has an RL. Uh-huh. The RL is a person who is not part of the bris.
Right.
Intrinsically. Mm-hmm. So a person who doesn't have a bris, but he's part of the bris, doesn't have a mila, but he's part of the bris, is not called an RL. He just happens not to have one. Mm-hmm. So if he went to a moil and had him was mal, mm-hmm. then he would automatically, he's still part of the bris. Still part, he's still Jewish. Still Jewish. He's therefore is a chelik olam haba, intrinsically. He should go get a mila. He's still part. Physiologically, he's got as a chassar, he has a problem, a lack. But spiritually, he's still part of the Jewish people. Whereas a person, he may actually have gone to.
Even though he's not Jewish, even though
he's Jew, a person who's Jewish but doesn't have a mila.
Oh, doesn't have a mila. Okay, not a goy.
He's not called an arul. He's called a Jew. A person who could go to a physician and have the very best, precise mila. He's called an arul.
The shape that they're in.
He's not intrinsically part of the.
So how does that reflect the revelation? You were saying
over there. So he said when Adam Arishan was born, he was made, he wasn't born, he was made. He was made without an Arla. He was not an Arel, he was
not
a Mila. So when he was Chata, he sinned. He ate from the tree of Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. So not only did his insides change, but it's physiologically reflected by having now a lack of a mila, an arla. So I said it must go along because if he now has to process his bread, process the chita to make bread, he's taking the raw things and making them into something and raising it, because the bracha of lechem is always the highest bracha. The same thing with the mila. He's had to take himself out and bring himself up.
Okay. Here we go again. So,
should they parallel?
Okay, so we need man to move up to be able to be, that's part of the process. In the Maral's writing, you understand that this doesn't just become a process of growth, but it's a 50-day process of growth, as the Torah says, and what he associates it with, besides the standard things which he speaks about of eight, right, being beyond seven, is the maximal dimensions of this world, right? When you look at length and width and depth, right? So that's six poles, right? Right, left, north, west, south. North, south, east, west, and up and down, and then the Shvi, which is Shabbos, is the middle, is the center, is the center point from which all of these things radiate. Eight is not a dimension which exists within this world. So eight is beyond. So what we do is we count the seven cycles of seven, which is the fullness, and then you get to the time of the Sphira, of the culmination of the sphere, which you can't even count, you can't even name. You don't say Hayom Chamishim Yom Laimer. That's Vikidashtem. That's going to be the one which is ultimately sanctified. Reflecting the same thing we have with the Yovel cycle, and that would be that's the idea, because what we're doing is we're going from Gufnius, from physicality, to that which is transcending it. So we go through all the different levels, all the different stages. Since Yitzias Mitzrayim, like Tinok Yotze Mimei Imo, we were just a goof, a body that came out, and we had to develop and we had to mature and incorporate the Seichel, incorporate a higher component, Das, which is the same process a child goes through as they grow up, and they develop Das, something which is just beyond physical consciousness, which is the consciousness of a baby, and develop some transcendent consciousness. So that's where they're going. And the 50 as well, we know, because when we speak about the Sharei Bina, the levels of understanding that exist in the world, we speak about the one which is ultimately with Hashem, is the 50th. That represents the ultimate presence of Seichel, of that which is beyond. And that's the process which to a great degree we go through as we do the Yitzias Mitzrayim, as we start with Yitzias Mitzrayim and move forward and move forward towards Matan Torah, towards the giving of the Torah. On Pesach, we don't do this. On Pesach, yes, of course, there are all kinds of allusions to Matan Torah, but fundamentally, we're celebrating the stage of Yitzias Mitzrayim. We're celebrating the stage of Yitzias Mitzrayim. V'lokachti eschem li la'om, perhaps the fourth language of Geula, Maral writes elsewhere, referring to the giving of the Torah, and there are always going to be allusions to this, but fundamentally, we're celebrating the stages here of Yitzias Mitzrayim, of leaving Mitzrayim itself. The morning after the second day of Pesach is when we begin the process of the Korban Ha'emer. Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu said, what exactly do you have in mind? He says, after Yitzias Mitzrayim, you're going to serve Hashem on this mountain. In fact, you're leaving Mitzrayim in order to be able to serve Hashem on this mountain. The Bnei Yisrael, when they left Mitzrayim, the Medrash says, the Ran brings it in Maseches Pesachim, when they left Mitzrayim, they themselves were counting. They're saying, okay, when are we going to get the Torah? You know, we need the direction, we need the purpose. But that was the event of Yitzias Mitzrayim stood for itself. And the next day, we began this process of counting towards, moving towards Matan Torah. Okay. So that's one level discussion of the chamishim aspect of this. But we go on and we look and we see this thing of the chitim, of the wheat, and specifically of the chametz, which is in fact used in the Shtei HaLechem of Shavuos. How are we to understand that? How are we to understand that? And if you recall, the Gemara, which we discussed a little bit earlier, a few weeks ago, spoke of when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah. And when he went up to get the Torah, so the Malachim, everybody remembers, the certainly the basics of the story, the Malachim challenge, why are you giving the Torah down to the earth? And Moshe Rabbeinu, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, Moshe Rabbeinu grabbed onto Hashem's throne, and he explained, with Hashem's urging, what the idea was. That because the Torah specifically addresses the issues that are here on this earth. And in the end, the Malachim not only acknowledged it, but they gave him some parting gifts. And they weren't turtle wax. They were, what did they give him? They gave him something special. And the Gemara says, even the Malach HaMavis gave him a gift. He gave him the gift, telling him the secret that the Ketairis is able to somehow stop the Malach HaMavis, neutralize death. The Malach HaMavis represents mortality, represents the Yetzer Hara. And all of the issues which we talk about getting the Torah have to do with the Yetzer Hara. In a sense, Shavuos is the Yom Tov when we embrace the Yetzer Hara, in a certain sense, more than any other Yom Tov. You know the Gemara that says that some say, some Yom Tov, you could choose to dedicate them completely LaHashem. But on Shavuos, everybody agrees that you have to feast. Everybody agrees that you have to have Lachem. Why? Because it's the day that the Torah was given. Because the Torah was given down to this earth because of the fact that we have a Yetzer Hara, and the Torah is the means and the way to be able to address the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says in Kiddushin, V'samtem es devarai eila alevavchem. So the Gemara says, Samtem means to place, but a play on the word is that it refers to a Samtem, which means a perfect herb, a perfect drug that will be able to neutralize the effects of the Yetzer Hara. Right? The Pagabach Menuval Ze Mashcheu LeBeis HaMedrash. If the Yetzer Hara encounters you, this horrible thing encounters you, drag him to the Beis HaMedrash, and you'll be able, it'll affect him, it'll take him over, it'll transform him. The Matan Torah is what enables us to then turn around and engage the world as it is. Torah, the way Matan Torah happened was that instead of the usual, right, when we think about Avoda, We think about ourselves trying to raise ourselves up to the Shamayim. At Matan Torah, what happened, right? So we go, we build a Mizbeach, right? And we send the Korbanos up to Hashem. At Matan Torah, what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu descended, brought His presence down to this earth, brought His presence down to Har Sinai. And the idea is, because again, that's the whole idea, the Torah is giving us that equipment to be able to address the issues of the Yetzer Hara. So, remember what we see the Chametz as. Chazal saw the Chametz as a physical symbol of the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says in Brachas that Rav Alexandri used to daven, his private tefillah at the end of the Shemana Esrei was, Rabbeinu Shel Olam Goli V'yadu Alefanecha Shiratzeinenu Lases Ratzeincha. It's known to you that our will is to do your will. But what can we do? There are two things that get in the way. Se'ar Shebe'isa and Shibud Malchias. Chametz gets in the way, and the enslavement of other kingdoms gets in the way. The fact that we're subordinate to other nations, they stop us from being able to do the Torah, from being able to keep Shabbos, from being able to do all kinds of things. And in our time where we're able to learn Torah, we're able to do it, but still, subordination to other nations does get in the way of a lot of our, what could be our truer expression of the fullest values of Torah. What does it mean, Chametz gets in the way? Well, Chametz is not the external issues. Chametz represents the internal issues. Chametz is the representative of the Yetzer Hara, of the that which ferments and spoils within us, that which where we just, you know, we sit around and we swell, you know, as the Chametz does, whatever the various elements of the symbolism but that's what it is. That's what it is. So we say, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we have internal issues and we have external issues. We have struggles internally with the parts of us, the very physical and mortal parts of us that get in the way of our really thriving completely in the service of Hashem. And we also have, on the other hand, you know, issues from the outside. Yitzias Mitzrayim was, of course, the paradigm of leaving Shibud Malchias. Of course it was the paradigm of leaving outside subordination. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. But it also is the Yom Tov of somehow freeing ourselves from the issues that we have on the inside. The issues that we have on the inside. And it's a fascinating thing. If you want to be able to engage and address physicality, you know what you first have to do? You first have to separate from it. You first have to separate from it. You know, many times, that's the way it works in all kinds of things. You know, yesterday, we had a Suda Shabbos here in Shul. We have Suda Shabbos HaGadol, just to make life easier for people. It's always very nice. And we ask some people to say Divrei Torah. So I asked a man who moved to a community, an outstanding person, Yehuda Bergman, Dr. Yehuda Bergman, to share one of the Divrei Torah. He's a psychotherapist, and his specific area where he's a master is something called drama therapy. And so I asked him, when he says Divrei Torah, people should know what he does. So he said the following. I still can't quite get over it. So his specialty is drama therapy with trauma victims and all kinds of trauma victims. He did a lot of work with victims of sexual abuse, but he also dealt with victims of terror. And for the past couple of years, past few years, who did he have the Pesach Seder with? He had the Pesach Seder with a group of people who had a Pesach Seder, I think 8 years ago, in the Park Hotel in Netanya. I can't even imagine sitting down at a Seder. I mean, I can imagine the associations which these people have with a Pesach Seder. Somebody walks in, shoots up their Seder. But as a trauma person, he had the Seder with them. And he said, you know, the first they had it, it was very subdued. So he did a pre-Seder, a pre-Pesach, you know, just to prepare them for it together. So he described a woman who lost a son, who was a young soldier in that attack, and she just couldn't move past it. She mamish couldn't move past it. She would go to his grave every single day, and her life was frozen around the grief over her child. So they had this group, and she talks, and she describes the thing, and she said that she has this dream, this dream that she has on a regular basis. And the dream is that she's standing at a train platform, and this train pulls up, and she sees her son standing by the door of the train, Natalis, ready to get off. And she's standing on the platform ready to go on. And he gets ready to go off, she gets ready to go on, and he's like, he's saying something. And before they have a chance, the doors close and the train leaves. So she has this dream, this constant dream. So he had two people from the group act out this dream. One of them was the son, one of them was the mother, the train, the whole thing. And he said to her, he says, "Tell me, what was your son trying to say to you?" And she said, "My son was trying to say to me, 'Let me go, mommy.'" So they reenacted. And he said it. And then he took her, and he had her play her part. Instead of having, you know, to watching it, he had her play her part. And they did it, you know. Let me go. And this time the doors didn't close. And the woman who was playing her son came, and they embraced. And she got past it. She got past it. I'm sure that it's not like she got past it clean break, you know, nothing. But she was able to resume life. She was able to resume life. So, you know, what's the, you know, he couldn't get through the story. He's the professional, and he kept stopping because he was crying because of the, I mean, this happened with a lot of tears. But the idea of it is that this is really the concept, is that, you know, to some degree you have to take it out. You know, you have to watch it, you know, and then you can master it. We had an Av Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was the most removed from this world of any of the Avos. Right? Yaakov Avinu was Yeshev HaHolam. Yaakov Avinu viewed this world as foreign territory. He was the most removed from this world of any of the Avos. He had a son, Yosef, who is Ben Bivchinas Av, Evan Israel. He was one of the tribes, but he wasn't just one of the tribes. He was a little bit of a patriarch. Right? He had two Shvatim, right? Menashe and Ephraim were on equal level to Reuven and Shimon. So he was something of an Av. Yosef was the greatest one to conquer the world. Yosef got all the brachas that Yaakov was promised when he masqueraded as Esav. V'yitim l'cham ital ha-shamayim, shvan tuva, the heavens, father of the land, mastery over kingdoms, your brothers will serve you. Yaakov had none of that himself. Yosef had all of it. Right? Tiyana l'rash Yosef, l'kot kait n'zirechav. All of it got to Yosef. You detach, and then you can master. You detach, and then you could master. You know, if a person is into something, they will have a very hard time being able to somehow control it. You have to somehow take a step back. Once you take a step back, then you can engage it. Then you could manage it, right? The nazir takes a step back, right? It's not ideal. The ideal isn't complete disengagement. Hashem didn't create us in this world to be completely disengaged from this world. But in order to engage this world in a way where you're really in control, where you're really bringing it under, you have to first disengage. And to some degree, that's Pesach. You know, the Ramchal writes, Pesach isn't natural. Matzah isn't natural. What's the raya? What's the proof? What's the great mystical proof of the Ramchal? Because matzah gives you indigestion. Right? You don't digest it well. That's the great mystical proof of the Ramchal. It's not natural. It's not normal. It's a period where we separate from the Yetzer Hara completely. So he says, you can say this at your Seder. It's a beautiful, beautiful, simple word on the Haggadah. He says, the Chacham asks, what are we doing all these mitzvahs? Says the Ramchal, what's his question? So it says, we tell him, Hilchas HaPesach, Eim Aftir Nachar Pesach HaVikayim. So simply, of course, he's very interested in everything. So we say, teach him everything down to the last Mishnah in Pesachim, which says, don't have anything after the HaVikayim. The Ramchal says different. He says, his question is, last week, I ate bread. Next week, I'm eating bread. This week, I'm not eating bread. This week, it's Treif V'Chazer, right? McDonald's, I can never go to, right? Dunkin' Donuts, I'm going to line up Monday morning to get my Dunkin' Donuts. I'm going to line up Motzei Pesach to get my Dunkin' Donuts. But for a week in between, it's Treif, like, what's going on? What's this all about, this unusual window in time? And we say to him, Pesach is a time when you experience some freedom, internal freedom from the Yetzer Hara. You eat the unnatural bread, you get rid of all the chametz. It's not normal. But what's the reason why you have nothing after the Afikayman? Is because you want to leave the taste of the Afikayman in your mouth, right? Even though Barton's used to sell after Seder mints. Right? But still, right? The idea was that you were supposed to leave the taste of the Korban Pesach in your mouth, or leave the taste of the matzah in your mouth. So what's the idea of leaving it in your mouth? You say, look, it may not be your long-term thing, but still, from the experience, you'll be able to take something forward. This is an unusual week. It's not meant to be normal life. It's meant to be different. It's meant to be a greater degree of disengagement from the Yetzer Hara than usual, so that then we can turn around through Sfira Matan Torah to the ultimate engagement, where we bring it into the Beis HaMikdash, where we make it, you know, the centerpiece of our Korbanos. Disengagement for the sake of ultimate engagement. That's it. The Torah gives us the tool of being able to address chametz. The Torah tells us nothing, in a sense, you know, is like off limits. So dafka, on Shavuos we engage the chametz, but first we got to step back. First we have to experience something of a freedom from it, and be above it and beyond it. Now, don't ask me how that explains the brisket, okay? You know, all the other food of Pesach, but the lechem, the basic. Is where we demonstrate that freedom from the Yetzirah. Okay.
A question. Yeah,
a question of Sameach.